The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Discover hope and healing from the other side. Welcome to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesman.
Listen, they're all around you, close as a thought or a memory. Messages of Hope. Messages of Hope.
Well, hello, everybody. It is so exciting to be doing this radio show now by radio, but also with video. It allows me to see my guests, and it allows you to go on YouTube later and watch the video. Just wonderful use of technology. And do we have a special guest for you today? I'm going to read a little bio first. Renowned Yardbirds drummer Jim McCarty is recognized worldwide for the innovative drumming style he introduced in the 1960s on top 10 hits such as For Your Love and Heart Full of Soul, and many more. After the Yardbirds, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992. Jim formed a number of successful bands over the next 25 years and released 3 solo albums of his own songs. So why is a man with this kind of background on Messages of Hope? You're about to find out, because as we all know, we all have our own story and it contains many sub-stories. And Jim's had a real turn in his life, but it resulted from a lifelong dive, I would say, into the metaphysical. So let's dive into your story by welcoming you to the show, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's a great honor.
Hey, so right away, everybody knows we have a British accent here. And actually, you're in France now, aren't you?
Yes, I've been living in France for around about 20 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I want to hear a little bit about what it was like to be a drummer with the Yardbirds and part of that whole crazy era of rock and roll in the 60s. We won't spend a whole lot of time, but I want to hear it from your point of view.
Well, I'd say it was very fast. It was very hectic, and it was a bit of a roller coaster. You know, it was very much up and down. Having the hits was great, but then you had to work very hard, and you didn't know where you were, you know, you were in a hotel room. You didn't know where it was. It could be anywhere, and it was pretty mad, you know. And it was like. I guess we were only together about 5 years, but that was like a whole life in that 5 years. There was so much going on. Incredible.
Wow. And you wrote a book about that time. Do you want to tell us about that book?
Yes, I did a whole book called Nobody Told Me, which is basically my autobiography. With another guy called Dave Thompson, who's an English guy who lives in America. And he's a real rock and roll writer, you know, he's written loads of rock books. And he was great to work with because we got on really well. And it's basically my whole life concentrating a lot on the Yardbirds, because that's what people wanted to hear about, you know, all the guitar players and all the hits and everything else.
Yeah. Well, here's a picture that those who are listening on radio can't appreciate, but I'm looking at it, and it's you at what age?
I reckon I'm sort of about 22, 23, something like that.
Right. This is the cover of your book, Nobody Told Me. But today we're talking about the book that this photo that I'm looking at now is on the last page of. And this is your latest book called She Walks in Beauty. Quite a turn from that other book. What is this one about?
Well, that's really, I decided to do that one because I went through the passing of my wife, Lizzie, last year. And I set out on a journey really to look into what had happened to her. You know, it didn't seem that she could just disappear into thin air and that was it. So I wanted to really investigate where she could be and how I could communicate with her if possible, because we always said, she said before she passed, you know, oh, how can we communicate? And so it was a whole journey, and I thought, you know, very interesting. And I thought it was good to tell people. You know, I was motivated to write about it. Also with Dave Thompson, who came on board as a surprise, because I didn't think he'd be at all interested in this subject. And he loved it, you know. It was one of those... you know, coincidences. I suddenly got an email from him. He said, "How are you doing?" And I called him up and told him about the idea. And he said, "Oh yeah, I'm really into that. I'm so excited. I'm going to start right away."
I find that all the time in my work. We make assumptions that people we know aren't into metaphysics and spirituality, the afterlife or the everlife, as my guides call it. And then once you start the discussion, they come alive.
I know, it's amazing. And actually what happened was I tried to do have a medium session with you, and because you had a very long waiting list, and apparently you'd recommended somebody called Colleen Smith. So I went to her and I had a couple of sessions with her, and then during the session she said, "Oh, I've got Lizzie here," and she, you know, She thinks it's a good idea if you do a blog. Why don't you write a blog about all these things that have happened to you and you know, what's happened between you and her since she passed? And so it really came from her, this idea.
I love that. I hear that a lot from those in spirit, or they know that their loved ones are writing a book, or they encourage them to do that. Well, I'm glad you followed up on it, because the book is great. But it's not just about the time since Lizzie passed. Let's go back to your childhood and talk about how your interest in the world beyond and metaphysics started at an early age.
Yes, I was always very interested. I mean, I had a pretty rough childhood, to be honest. My parents didn't really get on. There was always a weird atmosphere between them, and they argued. And my father used to drink quite a lot as well, you know, as sort of an outlet. So it was pretty tough, you know, being in that atmosphere all the time.
Sure.
And the only sort of religious thing that happened was I went to Sunday school, and it was in a Baptist church. And I always remember when they had these baptism ceremonies, I used to get quite overwhelmed, and I used to get a strange feeling in my stomach. I guess it was in my, you know, my solar plexus, you know. And I used to tell my mum, "Oh, I saw this ceremony and I got this funny feeling in my stomach. What would that be?" And of course, she didn't really know what I was talking about. But it was difficult. But another thing I did when I suppose I was around about 10, I noticed that I was... when I was on my own, particularly when I was in my bedroom, I found that I was like self-aware. I was aware that I was thinking of something, or I was looking at myself from outside at a very young age. You know, it's almost like something that the Buddhists would talk about now, you know, and I just did it spontaneously. So I don't know where that came from at all.
Did you have any interaction at all with any loved ones who had passed, or any awareness that there is an afterlife?
No, I didn't really think about it, to be honest, very much. I was very upset when my grandmother, my mother's mother, passed, but I never thought. I sort of went through a sort of a grieving. I guess I was a young, probably in the early teens or something by then. But I didn't really think much about contacting or anything like that. It wasn't in part of my my thoughts. It wasn't in my mind.
Okay, so how about then in the 60s when you're off touring with the Yardbirds around? I know you toured around the United States and keeping very busy. Did you have any time for spirituality, metaphysics, and any unusual experiences?
Well, yes. Myself and the singer, who was a guy called Keith Ralph, and he actually died in the 70s in a sort of tragic accident. But we were very friendly, and we used to share a room together. And we, of course, we used to talk about all this stuff. It was a sort of way of release, I guess, from the pressure of touring. Uh-huh. And we'd talk about all the strange things, and, you know, we'd talk about Atlantis and psychic stuff and UFOs and all this stuff. And we were quite sober. I mean, we weren't really druggy. But I did have a bad experience on LSD. I took some LSD at one time, and we were playing in the Fillmore or somewhere like that in San Francisco, and this guy appears, and he's like a biker, you know, a leather jacketed biker. Mm-hmm. But like somebody called Owsley, he was a professor, and he made all the LSD on the West Coast.
Oh my goodness.
And of course he would appear, I guess he went to all the rock concerts and met all the bands and gave them all this stuff, you know. And I'd sort of read up about it. I read some Timothy Leary books and, you know, the Tibetan Book of the Dead and all that stuff. And I was quite interested in it, but I wasn't expecting what happened. You know, I had a really bad time.
I remember reading about this in your book, and it affected you for quite a while negatively.
Yes, I came back to England after a tour, and I was very depressed. You know, and it went on for a long time. It went on for, you know, quite a few months, and actually I couldn't even work at one point. Wow. You know, the band had to get another drummer for a few dates, and I had to join a tour later on, and I was in quite a state. And I think that gradually propelled me into a sort of a spiritual healing journey.
Tell us about that.
You know, I used to go, finally, after, you know, I'm starting to get a bit better. And I finally went to somewhere called the White Eagle Lodge. Have you ever heard about that?
I have heard about that through my studies with the Arthur Findlay College and the spiritualism path. Yeah.
Yes, it's an English an English group of people. It's a family, actually. They're all related, but they follow the teachings of White Eagle, who was a native Indian. And they did healing services, and I used to go and get healing, and I ended up being in one of the healing groups. And we used to sit in groups of six, and we'd go through names of people that needed healing, and we'd send colors to, you know, various chakras. Somebody worked out what these people needed, and apparently, you know, they always said, oh, this is a scientific thing. This is not sort of, you know, airy-fairy. This is something that actually does work. And the feedback from the people that get the healing is always very good. And I guess it worked on me, too.
So you were definitely diving into this years and years ago. So yes. Fast forward, tell us a little bit about Lizzie and how you met.
Okay, well, we met at an alternative centre in Malvern, which is in the west of England, near Worcester, and it was interesting. It was like a centre that was created by four different families, the leader really was somebody called Tony Neat. And he was involved in a group called the Atlanteans. You know, it's sort of a theosophical group of people. And he used to channel. He channeled somebody called H.A. that was apparently a an entity that had never lived.
So this sounds like real woo-woo stuff for the decade in which you were doing this.
That's right. But we actually met, Lizzie and I met there because she was working as an art director in a gallery, the Listen Gallery in London. And she was under quite a lot of pressure. You know, she was quite pressurized in her job. And she used to go to this center to get some healing, get a massage, you know, go, they had a tank there, you know, an immersion tank where you relax.
Oh, nice.
She used to go there, and I used to go because I think I went. Yes, I went because I heard about Tony, and I eventually went to him for some counselling because I was in a difficult relationship, and then we met one night in Tony's house. And then it went from there.
Very good. Okay. So, unfortunately, Lizzie's no longer in physical form, but the main reason we love to have you on the show today is because you found her. So, with your shared background and going to this healing center, you are of like mind as far as alternative realities. She passed of cancer, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
So, tell me about any discussions you had before she passed about, did you talk about what you would might what she might expect and about communications afterwards?
We talked a little about it, but it was sort of, it was a bit taboo, I think, because we all, you know, we both never gave up.
Okay, yeah, I get it.
So, you know, and somebody, a nurse came to see her because she was treated in the home, and nurses came looking after her every day. And one of the nurses came and said, "Well, you're not going to live, you know." And I'm telling you something a doctor wouldn't tell you, you know. and she said, "Well, you know, I don't have to take that on board. I mean, there was always the thought that there might be a miracle." You know, and she worked very hard on alternative treatments and, you know, all sorts of things. And she spent quite a lot of money, actually. The people, her relatives and friends were very generous, and they gave her money, which she spent on various treatments. And but nothing seemed to stop it. It was very, very aggressive.
Yeah, I know that was challenging. And yet, you dove right in the midst of your grief after she passed to doing your best to find her.
Yes, yes. I think what set it up for me was not long after she'd passed, a couple of people that she knew, a couple of girlfriends, dreamt about her, and they said, "Oh, she, you know, she's fine. She looked great, and she was very happy." And when she was still alive, we used to go for walks in this little village, which is quite near here where I live, right up in the hills. And there's a little cafe there. And, you know, we used to go up there quite a lot, probably every week. We go and walk around in the nature. And we went, after she passed, I went up to the cafe, and I saw the woman that owned the cafe before, because it got taken over. It was a French woman, probably, you know, in her 60s, and she always used to chat to Lizzie, because Lizzie spoke quite good French. And this woman, Catherine, she said to me, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I saw you two walking, like I normally do, and she was very happy, and you were in tears. And then she said, when I went into work, they said she'd died.
Wow.
So I thought, wow. So I thought she...
So there you were walking, crying, missing her, and this woman literally saw her walking beside you, which I know happens.
Yes. Quite happy. I mean, you know, So I thought, well, she must be, she must, she's been seen, so she must be present in some form. So I started to look at, YouTube, near-death experiences, and I followed you because somebody used to send me your Daily Wave messages, which I signed up for now, and they always helped me. And I thought, oh, this is there's something here that's helping me.
Your path is very familiar to so many people listening to this show because, we're a little interested in the metaphysical, but then when somebody passes, we just have to know. And you earlier in the show, you said that you just suddenly knew that the spirit that is your Lizzie couldn't just disappear. And that's how I felt when my stepdaughter Susan passed. And I know that's what so many people listening feel, the same thing.
And I found on YouTube, I found Evan Alexander, who had a great story to tell. And I mean, he was a brain surgeon or something, wasn't he? And he was
Yes,
saying,
a
well,
neurosurgeon who had a near-death experience.
had a near-death experience, and he spoke about it. And he said, well, his brain was dead. His brain was dead, but he was having this experience, which was wonderful, and he re recounts it. And he said, so, that consciousness is not about the brain. This is something else, which is, most of us don't know that.
And it's just stunning that most of us don't know that because I spent much of the morning reading a book about consciousness and survival of consciousness, and the evidence has been around for over 100 years. Every culture in the world knows this, and it's just that this scientific revolution that we've gone through denies what the evidence is showing us. And I feel we're coming around now, and books like yours add to the volume of knowledge, so it's great.
It's all sort of suppressed knowledge, isn't it? I don't know what it is. We're sort of in a very narrow pathway in our lives,
Yeah.
most of the people anyway.
Yeah. So I came to know Lizzie when I did a reading for you, but we're going to wait until after the break to talk about that. What was your first personal contact with her, whether through a medium or your own individual experience? Share that with us.
My first contact. well, I probably wasn't aware of it because I saw a lot more birds than I normally do, and I have a terrace. I have a terrace here, and these birds started coming into the terrace, and butterflies. So, I wasn't really aware, but I thought something's a bit different. I haven't noticed them before. And lots of magpies I noticed, and actually then it sort of warmed up the more I found out, and when I did your you had a course on Zoom, and of course it started about, I think it started about 9 o'clock here in the evening, and then I saw that after the first one, which was like finished about 11 o'clock. I went in the bathroom to clean my teeth and the lights flashed.
Oh, right after your first course with me, right, the first session.
It's
Oh,
never
good
done
one, Lizzie.
it before. Never done it.
Did we talk about signs and synchronicities in that first lesson so that you ascribed it to her? You knew that she was trying to get a message through to you? Or would you, did you, you were just more attuned then?
I just gradually got more attuned, I think. I don't remember what the first episode was now, but I know it was a great course. I really enjoyed it, and it did help me a lot, to tune it. I mean, it's a sort of a tuning, a fine tuning, isn't it?
It is, because that ability is here to notice our loved ones. And the thing about signs and the birds that start coming is when you can connect that with your loved one because they're pinging your heart, like pay attention. And there's this pull, this nudge to notice these things. So a lot of people say they're not getting signs when in fact they just don't know what to look for. So you started to notice.
Yes, and the feathers, you know, lots of feathers. That's interesting, you know, finding feathers on the floor and feathers in different places. I don't know where they come from, but and a medium did say, oh, she leaves feathers for you. So very interesting.
Have you collected those?
I put them down back with a photo there behind me. So it's a little shrine there.
Nice, nice. And how about through mediums? I know you said you had a couple of sessions with Colleen Smith, who's wonderful.
Yes, I had the session with you. I think I did a couple more. Yes, I mentioned a couple more, and they were all very accurate in describing her. You know, it's always the same. Nothing went very far away, and so I gradually started to believe it, get stronger and stronger. And some of the grief started to go away. It helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's the whole point, isn't it? It's not just to show the continuity of consciousness. It's to show that the title of your book again, She Walks in Beauty. She walks beside you still.
Yes, which is... yes. And she seems to communicate. It's always something very funny, you know. It makes me laugh because... We used to have a thing between us. We call each other bunny, you know. We'd have a thing about bunnies with cards and cards with rabbits on and thing. And
well, you know what, Jim? We're about to go to a break, so you're going to have to tell us what kind of sign she got through to you through the bunny after the break.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesemann.
So welcome back, everybody. We're here with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Jim McCarty, drummer with the Yardbirds and many other groups over the years, who's now talking to us about how he has reunited with his love, Lizzie, who passed from cancer only about 18 months ago. Isn't that right, Jim?
Yeah, in June of last year.
And you were just talking before the break about how these efforts you made to connect with her and the awareness you came to that she's still with you helped the grief to rise, to lift. You were talking about some instance of with a bunny. What was that about?
Well, they're always very, they always seem to be very amusing things because we laughed about bunnies. We had a thing about rabbits, you know, and we had bunny cards and we used to call each other bunnies sometimes. I mean, between the two of us, you know. And one day I was out driving just near here, and suddenly I saw these two rabbits, and it was so funny seeing, you know, I've never seen two rabbits running. They were sort of running into the road. I don't know where they came from. It was very, very funny.
Did you may have felt her presence then, but how about just presence overall? Certainly we're thinking about our loved ones and the rabbits would raise nice memories, but let's talk about the actual feeling of your wife's presence after she passed. What's that been like?
Yes, it's very interesting. It's something where I could almost choose. Now I don't have to do the ritual because I did do the bless me method.
And, you know, and just for anybody who's new to my work, that's the 7-step method that I teach for connecting with loved ones and higher consciousness. And so from what I'm inferring, it worked for you, but then you no longer need it, which is the goal, of course.
That's right. Yeah. And so I can sort of tune into her, and I can get a thought, you know, about, oh, what should I do here? Or what should I do there? Or, you know, advice, you know, because really she I used to rely on her quite a lot, you know.
Yes. I want to share, I was going back through your book this morning. And there's just this really great moment here about, you say, I decided to commune with Lizzie every day and write down anything she told me. These things would vary from day to day, but most of the time I would get a strong feeling that she was there with me and that she was happy. So you say one time you were about to watch soccer on the TV and she said there would be a message there for you. I would love if you share that with everybody.
That's really funny. Yeah, I know. And because the bedroom is on a lower level. This house is on different, quite four levels or whatever. So the TV is up on this level and the bedroom. And I normally communicate with her in the bedroom. And she said, oh, there's a message for you coming on the soccer. So I thought, soccer? What are you talking about? You know, how can there be a spiritual message on the football? Because I was just to watch. And I switched it on and Liverpool were playing. And of course, all their fans, that they have the song, you know, You'll Never Walk Alone. You know, and I thought, there you go.
There you go. So that might have just flown by over somebody's head right there. I want to just put it again into just repeat what happened is she said, there's a message for you in the soccer game. You went downstairs, turned it on. Liverpool was playing. They always have songs they play. And on comes the song, You'll Never Walk Alone.
Yeah, that's their song.
Yeah, well, it's a perfect message for you, isn't it? And for all of us.
It really is. Yeah.
Lovely. And then let's see. You say, I think the thing that most impressed me, however, came the evening I was planning to call our tour manager.
Oh, yes.
That in Los Angeles.
Yes. Yes. There was a woman called Mariah that works for us who lives in Los Angeles. I can't remember exactly where, but. And I, you know, I had to call her about something, and I did your trick about, Lizzie, tell me something about Mariah that I don't know.
Yeah, let's pause there for a second, because that's something I teach everybody. So everybody who's listening now, what Jim did was use that perfect tool to say, look, Lizzie, I know I'm talking to you, and I'm about to talk to Mariah. So tell me something about Mariah I don't know. And then Mariah will be able to validate it. You're a good student, you know that? you really apply the things.
Yes. That's right. And I got the impression of a skipping rope.
A skipping rope, okay.
When I a skipping rope, and I thought, okay, skipping rope.
Jumping rope. Little girls use jump ropes. We call them jump ropes in the United States.
Probably it's different word. But anyway, I was talking to Mariah about whatever it was. I had to call her about, and then I sort of said to her, "Oh, by the way, Mariah, do you ever do skipping at all?" And she said, "Skipping? Skipping? Oh no, I used to do that when I was a little girl." And then she thought about it, and then Lizzie said something about a skipping rope to me just now, and she sort of thought about it, and then she said, "Oh, hold on a minute." I'm a big fan of Salvador Dali, the artist, and she said, "In fact, I've done a homage to." Salvador Dali, because he used to do these paintings, and he used to put Alice in Wonderland in the painting, and Alice was normally skipping with a skipping rope. So she said, "I've done a homage myself, and I've paid this homage, and it's right behind me on the wall."
Oh.
And then and she said, "There's a skipping rope in it." So she sent me it sent me the picture. It's amazing. I mean, it was so
accurate.
And
here it is, for those of you who want to go to YouTube and watch this interview, there's the picture right in his book, She Walks in Beauty, of this homage to Dali that Mariah made with a girl in a jumping rope.
That's right.
I mean, you get an A+, Jim, for that one. And so does Lizzie. We got to give her most of the credit, right?
Yes. Oh, yes, it's all her. I mean, it's all her. And that's been incredible. There was another thing about what I was trying to think of before, was that she, when she wrote down, she wrote in a little book before she died, and about where she wanted her ashes. And she wanted her ashes put in a place on the coast here that we used to go to. It's about an hour and a half drive. And it's a lovely garden. It's a big sort of tropical garden. It's a beautiful place, right on the sea. So we always talked about where we wanted our ashes, or where she, you know, and there was a particular spot. And she said, "Oh, I'd like it, you know, I'd like you to go there, and I'd like some jasmine put down with the ashes." She'd written it down. Anyway, I decided to go with a friend, because she wanted some people from England to come, but they couldn't come because of all the lockdown stuff. So I decided to go with a friend who was a shiatsu practitioner that treated her while she was alive. So I was talking to her, and I said, you know, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go with this man, Cater, who's going to go with me. Put your ashes down. If that's a yes, give me a sign.
No, I love it.
So anyway, I thought, you know, I waited for a bit. Now I had to go and call somebody first of all, and then I went back down, and I was looking down on the floor, and I thought, what is that on the floor? There's some sort of flower, and there was some jasmine on the floor, jasmine flower.
In your house?
Yes.
Whoa.
On the floor by where I was sitting, communicating with her. And there it was. I couldn't believe it. Here's the jasmine. How on earth did it get there?
Oh, that's a good one. Lizzie's a strong one. Boy, that's called an apport, when something comes that has no reason to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. That was something, you know, that so she's quite good at it.
So you asked for a non-specific sign. Just give me a sign that this is what
yes.
you want done. And boy, you know, that's unequivocal.
Yeah.
Very, very clear. That's a yes, all right.
Wow. Yeah.
Beautiful. Good job.
So, huh. Went and did as to her instructions.
Yeah. Wow. So I want to talk about doing a reading for you. First of all, I had heard a little bit about you because you struck up an email conversation with my wonderful assistant, Lynette. She schedules radio shows and she schedules my readings. How did that come about? You and she sending emails back and forth.
I don't know. I can't remember. I started talking to her, and I always got a nice, very nice feeling from her emails when she wrote back. And I think I told her I'd been in the Yardbirds, and I think she recognized that or something, and then she said, you've done pretty well, you know, you've made a mark in the life or something or other, she said. And then we used to talk, and she used to tell me about her husband as well,
who passed. Yeah. So you two had this commonality of both having a spouse who had passed, and you coming to know that there's more, and that Lizzie's still with you, and that's a nice kinship. And I remember she said to me at one point, I'm sending emails back and forth. There's a guy in your class who used to be a drummer with the Yardbirds, and he's a famous musician. And I said, well, that's pretty cool. It's the last person I would expect to be in my mediumship class and reading the Daily Way messages. And so I believe she said you were on my waiting list for reading. So I don't know, how long ago was it I did your reading? Maybe 6 months ago now?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So all I know, Lynette schedules everything. She puts it on the calendar, and she knows I don't want to know anything about the people I'm reading for. And so all I have is a reading for Jim. Now, how many Jims are there in the world, right? It could be Jim anybody. And so you come on the screen, just like I'm looking at you on Zoom right now, but you were in a different room because I can see guitars in the background here, but there was nothing to indicate you were a musician on the screen.
Yeah.
It was just you in a nondescript room. So I feel it was such a gift that I didn't know who you are, and I didn't know that you wanted to hear from your wife, because going into that reading blind, I just scanned the field for whoever's here. In fact, you didn't identify yourself as who you are. You didn't say you've been talking to Lynette. It's just, good morning, Jim. Are you ready to do this reading? And we just dove right in. So I said, we'll welcome anybody who shows up. Sound good? And you said yes. And so I remember we tuned into your mother and father and spent a good deal of time with them, right?
And that was the first time ever that they've been contacted. First time I'd ever heard from them.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. To me, it's pretty normal to tune into people's parents. And how accurate, you already described earlier in the show, the relationship you had with your parents, things about them that made your childhood tough. Did any of that come through, or what, if you want to share it here, came through?
Yes, because I remember you said something about, I can hear air raid sirens going. Oh. And there were. I mean, I was born during the war. And there were bombings in where we lived.
I remember, I got goosebumps now. So I completely forgot about that. I could hear those air raid sirens and knew you had been present when they went off. That was a first.
Incredible. In fact, there was a whole block that was completely flattened. There was a pub, a public house on the next block on one Saturday night, and it was full of people.
Yeah. And that certainly was a memory that your parents brought back. And I know that they had some important messages for you, and that's why they pushed their way in. So again, sometimes it's good to know who somebody wants to hear from. We zero right in on them. But if I had zeroed in on Lizzie from the beginning, if I had known you had a wife who passed or who you were, we would have gone right there. And our human nature causes us to assume certain things. If I had known you were a musician, that would have come up. So I remember you said later that you heard some things from your parents that you needed to hear. So I found that.
Yeah. Yes, it was very nice. There was a lot of love. I mean, they were giving me a lot of love, which I hadn't experienced when I was a little boy, you know.
Yeah. I think the picture changes when you cross the veil, trust me. But they did paint themselves the way they were, that you recognized them. So then all of a sudden, now we're tuned into Lizzie, and I sense that she had passed from cancer. And I remember she was bringing up music, and she showed me you playing a guitar and writing songs for her.
Yes,
and
that's right.
That's another place where I knew that if I had known you're this famous drummer, I wouldn't have been able to hear her talking about the guitar. I would have only kept drum in my mind.
Yes, because I write songs and sing as well, you know. That's another side to what I do, and she loved all that. She loved that side of it,
which is what she brought up, which is so cool. Wow. Is there anything else you remember about that reading or you want to share, or readings in general, how healing they've been?
Well, I remember you said, oh, you were very firm. You said, I want to hear that song, and I send it to you.
That's right. I said, she says you wrote a song, and I want to hear it. And you were embarrassed because it was pretty rough and not polished at the time.
And I still haven't finished it. So I'm trying to get somebody to do the arrangement on it so it'll be finished. And you'll hear it in its best nature, I hope.
Well, we all look forward to that. You got to get it on out there for the public.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also glad that I didn't know at the time that I would end up in a book. This happens sometimes when I do readings, and then the reading ends up in the book because the person's writing one. So I'm especially grateful from my point of view of wanting people to know how real mediumship is, that we had a great connection with her.
Yes. Well, you've done a lot. I mean, you did a lot to... You know, I did a lot of stuff with you at the workshops and the monthly mentoring. I'm in for this month as well.
Okay. We're all learning together, Jim, all of us. It just never, never ends. So tell us what you're learning most of all since her passing on this journey.
Well, it's a it's a big thing. I mean, it's obviously because we always thought that I was going to go first. I'm 18 years older than she is, or she was, and you know, that obviously I have to do something or other. You know, I've got things to do, and I guess I've got to improve myself, or you know, go up the scale or whatever. I've been following Rob Schwartz as well, who has this thing about divine virtues that you know you can use in your life. If you lose somebody, sometimes it's a way of going forward. And you know, things like trust, and actually with me, it's he says one of them is self-referencing. And of course, I used to rely on Lizzie so much for you know, to do things, and especially being in France, because she spoke much better French than me, and she did all the, you know, the French admin and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've had to do all that, and so it's a big learning process for me, big learning curve, and a big expansion, you know. A big expansion of consciousness for me.
So what do you mean by that? Describe yourself and your awareness before Lizzie's passing and now.
Well, yes. I mean, I'm aware now. So much, you know, you talk a lot about connection, you know, being all connected, and the network going on and all that stuff. And I'm aware that's so much more important. And, you know, there's a everything is so much bigger than I had thought before, you know, so much in terms of network and connection, and so much we don't know as well. It was a bit of a shock, obviously, first of all, because I didn't know where to go, but things are gradually unwinding and expanding for me in a good way, you know, in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't be any other way when you start down this path and you start connecting across the veil, regularly carrying on a relationship with Lizzie in a different way. But clearly you are maintaining that relationship.
Yes. It's you know, actually the word I was going to say is it's a revelation, huh. You know, real revelation.
Well, you know, one of the most beautiful messages that came through in your reading, and that the messages are always as significant, if not more, than the evidence that our loved ones show us that they're here, is the message about how she feels about you. And in fact, you have a picture of that in your book. Do you remember the message that was?
Oh, yeah. Yes. In fact, it's over there. It's over there on the wall. I love you to the moon and back. Is that the one you're talking
That's
about?
That's the one. I mean, here she is giving us evidence. And I said, well, your wife just said, I love you to the moon and back. And you said, I have a card with that on it. Did she give it to you or you give it to her?
I think I gave it to her, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
And here on the video, I'm showing it. Here's the picture of that card in the book. So just, I mean, a beautiful message with inherently in it this amazing evidence that, of course, she knows about that. And you have it on the wall, and it sure was not visible during the reading, except to Lizzie.
That was amazing. That was pretty good, that one, wasn't it? Picking that up. Yeah.
I love that message from her.
Yeah.
And now she loves you from the spirit world and back, just as all of our loved ones do, which is just...
Right. So it's an ongoing adventure, the whole thing.
It is.
A real adventure.
So how do you keep your relationship with her alive now?
Well, I you know, I'm regularly talking. I have a sort of regular time when I meditate and sit there. And I have a book, you know, I write down anything that comes up and any advice and all the things that she might want to say, you know, or ask her, does she have anything to tell me or anything to say about anything? And it's very interesting. You know, I keep it's good to be disciplined about it.
You are a prize student. I'm very proud of you. Gold star.
Thank you.
So here we go from this book with you as a 22-year-old rocker, you know, nobody told me to now, She Walks in Beauty, My Quest for the Bigger Picture. Tell us about the title.
She Walks in Beauty is a poem by Lord Byron. And I actually did a musical version one time a few years ago. I did make it into a song, but I haven't really said much about that. But it just seemed very apt, you know. She walks in beauty, which she does, you know. She loved beauty, and we always used to walk in beautiful places when we were together. And the quest for the bigger picture, obviously, is, you know, what's going on, you know, how is she still around, and you know, where is she, and where has she been, and what form is she in, and all those questions are still there.
And how satisfied are you with the answers you're personally receiving through personal experience?
Yeah, yes, good, good. I mean, I need to evolve all the time, I think, to keep up with it.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Well, it's very subtle, as you know. It's all very. It's not like they're going to appear. I've never actually seen her appear, but.
Well, I haven't either. We can hold out that hope, right? If she can make Jasmine show up and feathers show up in your house.
Yes.
Hope there.
Yes.
Meanwhile, yes. Your songs are taking on a little bit more of a spiritual tone, deeper lyrics, huh?
Yes. Well, I always wanted to write about something a bit more, a bit deeper. Bit more interesting than just a love song or a blues song or whatever. I always tried to do that, and I've written quite a lot of songs style. And I think they will get more and more interesting. I mean, I've got to get working a bit.
Well, we have just 1 minute to go in the show. The time's gone way too fast, Jim. It's fascinating talking with you. But what's the most important thing you've learned since Lizzie passed?
I think the most important thing is that consciousness lives on, you know, and it is something separate from the brain. It's not all part of our body at all. It's, you know, it's something that. Well, it's obviously in the body, but it does live on, and we all live on. You know, and
it sounds as if you have no doubt anymore.
No, I don't. I don't have the doubt. And there's no real finality or finality to dying. That's not the way at all.
That's right. Well, I just encourage everybody to read She Walks in Beauty. It's a beautiful book with a great backstory and a profound message for all of us, and I so thank you for coming on the show. And
thank you very much. It's been great.
All right, been a pleasure. Bye bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Victoria Moran. Since we launched the Main Street Vegan podcast back in 2012, lots more people have discovered the way that moving in a vegan direction can infuse our lives with vitality, spirituality, and compassion. My guests are experts on every aspect of making this work in your real life and our real world. Join us for Main Street Vegan here on mindbodyspirit.fm.